and welcome to 10 Very Big Books, a Malazan read-through podcast. My name is Peter Bond. I've read every book of the main series. However, my co-hosts are reading the series for the first time. With me today is my friend and closest confidant, India Jones.
Hello!
Our producer, AJ Falleri.
Hi.
How are the bars? How are the levels?
Oh, they're good. They're great.
You love to hear it. And last but not least, Josh Osamwala Baker.
That's right. I am some delectable, that's the word? Yeah, bone marrow, baby. Just like roast me, crack me open, scoop me out, go to town.
My apologies to our French-speaking listeners, but...
You don't apologize to anyone, Pete. You just spent 10 minutes saying those three words over and over again.
And nothing
this.
Else.
I was trying to get it. I was trying to
and
do
I
it.
I think you nailed it.
Yeah, big shout-outs to our patron, Fabrice, for that wonderful wordplay. And it's supposed to be Josh Amwal instead of Josh Osamwal. But
oh, I see.
Like bone
I
marrow,
see.
But Josh Marrow, I guess. I don't know what the
exact... Why did you tell me to say the os in it then?
Just because that was the whole phrase, and you're supposed to put Josh at the os. Anyway.
You know what? I appreciate it.
Wow, you know, honestly, AJ, we've been going through this for 10 minutes, and not once...
Yeah, seriously, what the fuck?
In the beginning, you were saying it right, and I said, oh, do the os so that you get, like, the whole... Whatever. Anyway.
Josh, yes,
Josh Amwal.
There you go.
Okay,
there it is.
All right. We did.
Thank you, Fabrice. Sorry to all our French listeners.
And all of our regular listeners.
Well, French speaking, anyway, but...
French speaking.
Shout out,
also,
what's
I guess
going
I just implied
on?
That French people aren't regular, but I'm not taking it back.
Okay.
That's right. We're starting another, anyway, more beef.
Also, I just want to say Fabrice ended our exchange with, next time you come to France or Switzerland, try asking for a Josh Amwal, which I thought was funny.
I only call them freedom fries. That's anyway, so as you could probably tell, we're reading The Bone Hunters. And today on the show, we read chapters 14, 15, and 16, kind of some action-packed chapters in the middle of the book. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited to dive in and talk about them. So I think we should bust right straight on into this one and crack open a can of whipped cream, baby.
What?
Huh?
Like it's a cherry sundae. All right, here we go. Chapter 14. Scalara has decided to give up her baby. However, Leoric and other villagers argue with her over the decision. Berethal has decided that once Cutter is healed, he will travel to the coast with them. Berethal then speaks with Scalara about the baby and unburying Haboric. Berethal and Chower go and disinter the old man. When they do, they find Greyfog recovering. The demon goes and speaks with Scalara. Leoric is with Scalara. Corblo Dom is the father of her child. The two speak together about why Haboric was killed, the war between gods, and humility. Greyfog will go with Leoric. Cutter awakes in a dream. He slowly gathers his senses and is quietly observing Leoman and Dunsparrow. They convene with the Queen of Dreams. They speak about Leoman's debt to the Queen of Dreams, Hood and gods using mortals. The Queen of Dreams finally looks at Cutter, and he awakes. Leoric thinks on this town and about Berethal and Arryn. He takes Greyfog and leaves through a warren. Berethal remains working on something in his smithy. Karsa finds a Jagat corpse and they speak about the wounds. He thinks a strange creature is nearby, so Karsa goes out to hunt him. He returns and the bear has escaped. Karsa and Samar speak a long time then about the moon, omens, Karsa's past, and civilization. Mappo travels through a swamp with a Scarl Pust. He recalls when the Trell battled the Nimel, the tactics of the Elder Trinagar, and how it all ended. Mappo wonders if Pust is trying to slow him down when he encounters Spite. She says she has a ship nearby if they want to travel together. Although she helped free Dejim Nabral, she has been outlawed by the Nameless Ones and wants to tell Mappo more about what their scheme is. A young boy is sick, his village ravaged by plague. He walks with dogs north. Here he finds a city full of broken ones and Felicin Younger, who renames him Crocus. So, India, this chapter starts in the tiny village, and it starts with Skalara, and many people have opinions about her giving up her child, Lorik included, and she talks with Barathol and a few others, and I wonder how you're feeling about Skalara right now, and kind of the state she's in, and this recovery, and as she's kind of transitioning through this village. Where are you at?
You know, I think it's, I don't have much thoughts about this, PB, honestly. She doesn't want the baby. She doesn't want the baby, you know? It's just it.
Oh, sure. I guess I just meant more about where she was at, and I really liked some of those conversations around her, and I think here's one quote I pulled. It says, "Of course, in this instance, their virtue came easy, for it cost them nothing."
Mm-hmm.
And this is something Barathol was thinking about. And I think I just enjoyed some of the talk around these people who were, I guess, shaming her, or I don't know.
Being
bad vibes about it. And I thought that really surmised it pretty well that, you know, it's easier said than done, and it costs them nothing to say that. So I kind of really loved this whole sequence in there. AJ, what did you make of all that?
I mean, I don't know. I don't want to say I enjoyed it, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think that quote you pulled is a pretty good, summation of all of these scenes where people are trying to, like you said, shame her into keeping this child.
Sure.
I don't know. I appreciated that she was able to not keep the child of her own choice, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
But I also was interested in these Jessa women.
Yes, that wanted to keep it.
The Jessas.
Yeah, I was curious. I don't know if you know, like, is Jessa both their actual names?
Yes.
Or is it just like a title?
No,
like,
they are both named Jessa. Okay, one had a kid 14 years ago, and the other has a kid with fucked up legs that will die, which is upsetting.
Yeah, which is upsetting.
Yeah, they say that so cavalierly, too.
But hey, at least she kept her baby, you know? Anyway.
Mm. I love Skalara.
Me too.
I'm coming around on her, slowly. The gray frog thing... with him being like,
we can
finally speak. I had to not speak to protect the baby. And she's like, God fucking damn it. Why can't the baby be back in me?
Yeah,
Josh, speaking, Gray Frog's back. He comes, he's like recovering. And then more importantly, he kind of talks with Lorik. And I would say, although Lorik kind of showed up earlier in the Yucatan sequence, this is our first time really seeing more of him. And he talks a little more, talks to Barathol and a few other people.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of Lorik, and then he's gone, you know?
I'm enjoying Lorik less and less in this book as it goes on compared to last book. I really dug Lorik last book, and he is getting real fucking high and mighty in this one, and he's a lot of holier than thou speak, so
yeah.
I wasn't here for it with him and Skalara. I'm good, actually. Although him and Gray Frog's delight, because Gray Frog's fucking insane, and Lorik's just kind of like, this is my son. I love him.
I've never really vibed with Lorik, and I find him particularly insufferable in this chapter. So.
Yeah, I think in the last book, I was looking for anyone in that fucking camp. Not the last book, two books ago. I was looking for anyone
sure,
in that camp.
Anyone in Shaiq's Rebellion.
Yeah, to latch onto that I could give a shit about. So.
Sure. All right, well, you know, they're all recuperating in the camp, and they do disinter Haborik. And then after they do, AJ, Cutter wakes up in the dream.
Yes.
Queen of Dreams sees Leoman and Dunsparrow. What you make of this little eavesdropping scene in a way?
This scene was wild. Having the Queen of Dreams talking to Leoman and Dunsparrow and being like, oh, I didn't think I'd be talking to Dunsparrow. Oh, well, bad luck for you, I guess. And then for Leoman to just kind of be like, I don't know, still searching for a purpose or whatever. Oh, the one part I really loved in here was the Queen of Dreams talking about how Hood never forgave Whiskey Jack for taking Dunsparrow from his temple and like would like slightly intervene in Whiskey Jack's life, specifically like all he needed was a healer for that ankle and Hood just kept pushing it away, just like,
yeah,
you know, errant style nudging him away from being healed, just to make his death even worse.
And then now regrets it, which I was like, that's
yeah,
so
Hood regrets
interesting.
His decision, his lack of humility stings him yet again. Yeah, and then just telling Dunsparrow that basically, like, now Hood might try and, like, make her Whiskey Jack in a way of, like, I don't know, like, looking out for her or whatever, or like, trying to make up for what he did with Whiskey Jack. So I'm excited to see if Dunsparrow just, like, does a big heel turn and saves someone at some point. But, and then, you know, Cutter gets discovered, so that's frightening. Really confused how he got there, though, is the thing.
She's the queen of dreams and he was dreaming.
She is the queen of dreams, right? I guess it's just a dream. But like, I also feel like if you're the queen of dreams, if you have that title, you can tell people not to be in dreams.
And she put him in the dream.
Yeah, she must have brought
right,
him.
Right. Which is like, why is my thought.
Oh, she wanted him to see that conversation.
Sure.
Duh.
But why? It's my
AJ,
question.
Duh, AJ.
Yeah, AJ, read the fucking book. You'll find out.
Okay.
I know someone who isn't the Queen of Dreams on the show, so
it just seems weird strategically, but okay.
Everything yeah. seems weird strategically.
India?
That's because you're not thinking through the fourth dimension.
Totally fair, India.
Do you guys have big Dunsparrow energy checking in?
No.
No.
Yeah,
both,
she didn't really do
both
much.
Both Bridgeburner sisters in this book so far are fuck-ups, and I'm good.
Whoa.
Yeah, I said it. Quick Ben's sister and Whiskey Jack's sister are not great yet.
Whoa.
I don't know, man. I mean, I guess we'll get to that when we get to it, but
yeah.
Yeah, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
Well, we'll burn that bridge when we get to it.
Hey,
but wow.
Like the bridge burners. It's a Malazan joke. It's a Malazan show.
Hey.
All right, so let's keep cooking. So I gotta say, here was hot take out of PB.
Okay.
I really enjoyed all the Karsa scenes this week.
Wow.
Huh. What did you like about it?
I really liked his conversation with Samar. I found that this conversation here, I think sometimes the civilization stuff doesn't always hit with me. Mm-hmm. I think this stuff hit, talking about the moon hit, Karsa thinking about his past hit. And then, oh, that's later on, but the scene where he meets all the Eater is like fucking cool.
Yeah.
So I think both scenes hit for me in a major way. And I had a frightening thought. I was reading these scenes this week. I was like, oh no.
A frightening thought.
Am I enjoying Karsa Orlong now? On. Do you know what I mean? Have I changed, you know?
Oh, that's a beautiful thing. Like Karsa, you've changed.
Yes. Yeah.
Has Karsa changed that much?
Yes.
Wow. Well, I've certainly changed, but...
I think maybe you like how much shit Samar Dev gives him in these sections.
Mm-hmm.
She really gives it to him.
She does really lay into him. And she's wrong about some stuff, but she's not super wrong about some other. Like, she's pretty dead on about some other stuff.
Accurate,
you know?
Yeah,
but I think it's just nice to hear somebody be as hard opposite as Karsa is. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, and that's why I was telling you it's fun. You know, of course I know all this stuff I can't tell you guys, but I always enjoy Karsa the most when he's around Samar Dev.
Mm.
You know, this is I think they're a great pairing, and I think they counter each other so well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Angie, would you like these Karsa scenes?
Yeah, I did. I liked when Karsa was, actually I had to listen to it like four times, but eventually I came around to it. When Karsa's like talking about his past and he's like, you know, I felt this way and now I want to go to my dad and say, I understand, dad. And I want to go to my grandpa and I want to say nothing. And I was like,
fucking tight.
We all grow up, you know, our parents teach us one thing. Our grandparents teach us another thing. And eventually we make our own decisions.
Yeah, but most of us don't have grandparents who are like, slaughter the children.
You know, it's apples and bananas. Apples and oranges. But
no, apples and bananas, yeah. For sure.
I don't know, Josh. I mean, I feel like a lot of people have grandparents that are like, things these days aren't like they used to be. If we just went back to the way stuff used to be, it'd be great.
And
I think that
know.
Is just like an intense amplification of that thought.
Yeah, that's true. My pop-up, I got my birthday gift from my pop-up include a gun and a knife when I was very young.
Nice.
Double down, baby.
Yeah.
And then he let you loose into the wild and said, see ya.
I'm sure he wishes he could have.
You wouldn't have grown up so soft.
Yeah.
And I will say to my father, forgive me. You were right to disbelieve. You were right to despise the laws that chained us. And to my grandfather, I shall say nothing at all.
He will say nothing. He has nothing to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I really like that. I do think that it was like a little moment, a little... I mean, we already knew it. We already knew he felt this way. But it was nice, you know, for him and Sam, Mar, Sammy, to have that conversation, I think. But I'm, like, so sick of him, like, going away for, like, the day and then coming back, like, got away. Or...
Got away again, the white whale.
I do like how... Samar was like, oh, so you're going to go back and like apologize? And he's like, well, no, that would be weak.
Yeah.
And she's like, okay.
I actually wanted to read that quote because I think it's more interesting than you let it on, I feel.
Sure. Well, it depends which part you're reading.
She asks, have you a wife in your tribe? I have victims, no wives. A brutal omission, she reflected. Do you intend reparation? That would be seen as weakness. Then the chains still bind you. There was a Nathi settlement beside a lake where the Nathi had made slaves of my people. Each night, after hauling nets on the lake, those slaves were all shackled to a single chain. Not a single Teblor so bound could break the chain. Together, their strengths and wills combined, no chain could have held them. So for all your claims of returning to your people and shattering all that they believe, you will in truth need their help to manage such a thing. It sounds as if it is not just your father from whom you require forgiveness, Karsa Orlong. I shall take what I require, which... I think that's really great. I think that's a really interesting exchange, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I like to... I don't know what exactly they were talking about. I think I forgot. But sometimes I think Samar is a little holier than thou.
Yeah.
And I get it. I totally get it. But
definitely a sometimes. Sometimes.
Yeah. And I like when Karsa was just like, girl, you don't get it. This is not the normal world. We're not doing normal people things. We are animals in this forest. And telling her, you know, like, people have been following us. These bears have been following us 3 times because they're quiet and we're loud as fuck. And I don't know. I just think it's not. I just like at some point she needs to just like calm down a little bit and let Karsa be Karsa. And I like Karsa kind of. I think that they school each other.
Yeah.
In a good way.
Well, they're like trading jabs. And I think what you're saying about her being a little holier than thou is because like she is in some ways representing civilization or arguing on behalf of it. Mm-hmm. And she's like sometimes like, yo, Karsa, you dumb oaf. You're not as like civilized and bright as I am, you know, which to be fair, I feel is sometimes true.
No, it's always true.
Yeah. But then Karsa sometimes is like, yeah, but like, I don't know. Think about how. The tribal and, you know, I don't know, or whatever. I don't know. He's making a different appeal. I didn't phrase it well, but.
No, you phrased it better than I did, honestly. And that's what I mean. And also, who's like so excited for Karsa and Samar to get married?
you think they're going to get married?
That's my new hot take.
Really? That wasn't even on my radar, honestly.
It wasn't on mine either until this 1 second. But, you know, it's what I look for in these books. Mm. So I'm manifesting it.
So, Anj, do you really think he's rejecting the idea of reparations?
I mean, kind of. I think he just wants to, like, go back, like, say, tell his dad he was right, and then tell everybody, like, all right, time to get everything in shape. We gotta change things up around here, and then not really, like, acknowledge anything that he did in his past.
Hmm.
That's kind of what it felt like to me when he says, I will take what I require. It's just like, I'm just going to do and tell people like, hey, this is how we should be instead. I'm not sorry for what I did in the past. That's just how we were. But now we shouldn't be like that, which in a way is good. But also, I don't know, say sorry.
Yeah.
In all fairness, guilt is a useless emotion.
Mm. Ooh.
Yeah. Josh, what do you think?
I don't know.
Josh definitely has a ton of feelings about this subject.
Yeah, I don't know.
I guess I feel, AJ, I think you said it well. I think what his last line there about, like, I'll take what I require is like, really complicates the conversation in a way, in a good way, I think.
Yeah.
But I think he's definitely in some way acknowledging he did wrong, but is like, hey, isn't the real problem here these greater structures and systems that holding us down? Yeah. Which is true.
Right.
And it's like, cool, let's break those chains. Let's like change the systems, you know? Right.
But you still
like,
did do those about things.
Yeah. But like also you did it. So we should talk about your personal accountability
right.
as well.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
You know?
There's a couple of times throughout these chapters where Karsus says something and the person he's talking to is just like, ah, oh, you're still chained up then. Like, he's like, I'm free of these chains, and then says something else. And they're like, oh, so you're like super not.
Mm-hmm.
You're like very much not, though.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
But listen, we should talk about the second Karsus scene later. I think that's a fun little, that's a fun little ditty. So, Josh.
That's my name.
Tell me your hot take. Where are you at with this huge Mapo Trail flashback?
Absolutely loved it.
I knew you were going to love it. 1,000%. I knew you were going to love it.
It was so good. And first off, like, I loved the dumb characterization that, like, everyone gave that guy of, like, oh, he's quiet because he has nothing smart to say. And then, oh, what's that? It turns out it's because he's actually a military genius. Like, I just thought it was so goofy and cool. And I loved the fight scene, like the scene of how the battle unfolded. I thought it was really well done. And then Erickson was like, okay, and I know you all figured out that this is an allegory for the United States treatment of its Native American population. So now I'm going to really hammer it home. And I hadn't really felt that vibe. And then I was like, oh, okay, Steve. Okay, Steve, I get it now. It was because I'm reading some Westerns that my pup gave me just to be a good grandson.
You said he was like a big Western
fan. Huge Western fan. I'm reading Hondo by Louis L'Amour right now.
Hondo.
Yeah.
Haka!
It's not bad. But like, so I have a lot of those kinds of like things in my mind when I read that, because I don't like to read it from the perspective of white Josh Baker that knows jack shit about anything. I try to like think about these things as I read those books. And so as soon as he was like, and then they signed the treaties, but the treaties, of course, did all this bad shit. And then there was bad faith involved. And then the Trail were wiped out. I was like, ah, cool. We did it again. Humans crushed it. Also, we have never heard of this country before today, and they are now popping up all over the place. I feel like Steve expands his world in leaps and bounds sometimes. You know what I mean? Like, we hear about the same few places, and then all of a sudden he's like, but there's also, and then like 8 new names pop up that are like a stone's throw away. Like, how close are these places that we can get there? I think they're all connected by land too, but we never hear about them. Because I think Mapo has said before that the Trell come from like beyond the Jagodon or something. And if they were from over there and that's where this battle took place, then this other random ass country is on the same continent. It's just, we never see it on maps. I don't know. It really caught me off guard to know that there's like that much more potentially of Seven Cities. And I guess maybe it's not the same. I'm looking at the map and it says Nemel left. But also, like, the Jagodon is just kind of there. Like, there's no end to it on this map. So we actually don't know if it can be reached there by land.
That classic cardinal direction left.
Yeah.
So Mapo's continuing through the swamp with a Scarl, and he's like, am I being delayed? Is there, like, what's the rub, you know? And then he finds and he meets Spite. And they get on a boat and she's all whatever. Inge, what's your impression of Sister Spite here?
I was trying to remember where I heard of her before, but
she's in the prologue.
Yeah, she's Lady Envy's sister.
Yeah, in the prologue, she's a dragon, right, or something. She's got scales.
She turns into a dragon.
Yeah,
and flies away.
Yeah, and she helps them release Stegen of Ral.
Yeah, and leaves everyone to die. Exactly.
Right. Yeah. She makes the deal with Dejan.
So what do you think, Inge? Would you have gotten on the boat with her?
Yes.
Yeah, me too. 100%. Definitely. 100%. No doubt. I'm in a swamp with a Scarl Pust. I roll up. She's there on the boat. Please, baby. It's a gimme.
Yeah,
exactly. You know? Sure. Absolutely it is.
We've been walking 3 days in the wrong direction. Yeah, definitely. Get me
but
on that fucking
is
boat.
Is it the wrong direction if it took us here?
Wow.
Ooh. That's deep.
Yeah, that's a
good
call.
Can we get that on a tie-dye t-shirt?
Oh, yeah.
I That's funny as hell, PB.
And AJ, the last sequence here, a young boy kind of joins the Fallen, gets named Crocus, kind of worships Felicin. What do you make of this kind of dreamy like cut to, you know?
I loved, Josh and Indy are both giving emphatic disapprovals. I loved the scene with the kid, just like getting that, like Steve has done that a few times throughout the rest of the other books, where it's just like, we get this unnamed character who like goes through something. And then at the end of that section, like is woven into the main thread.
Sure. Sure.
So like I knew as soon as we started that part, I was like, okay, well I know exactly what's going to happen here. And then it did happen. But it was interesting to see the plague, because we haven't really seen it at this point. To see like a carrier is just a person with like swollen joints, and then they give off like a spore or something, which just awful, really just terrible stuff.
Yeah, I've mentioned how much I'm not enjoying reading it, and that climaxed this week. So
yeah. There's another scene later on where I'm like, man, this sucks. This sucks to read about.
Yeah. Just a lot of plague imagery. That's just not
a lot of like, it's hard to breathe and like, oh man. Anyway. So I loved that part of it. And then we get to Felicin, and what's his name is describing to her like
Kulat.
Oh, he's a Kulat. Yes, thank you. Is describing like, he's a carrier. Here's this thing. And this is where this part lost me, because she's just like cool with it now.
Yes. Oh my God. Yes.
It was like, it just felt, and I don't know if or think that this is related, but the timing was just weird, because it was like, oh, she's horny now. And then like a paragraph later was like, and also she's in it, and she's like ready to kill people.
And
I'm like, okay, well, this feels like a weird admonishment of like horny women.
She was very clinically horny. It is described as her followers had satiated all of her needs except her sexual ones. And it's like that. It just was a weird sentence to me. I did not like reading it.
Well, I absolutely agree. It's weird.
I feel the same.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I liked reading it or not liked reading it. It's just like, that is like, you know, biology or whatever. But like, it just like felt like a weird moment for
it
that. It just felt like
sentence.
This all happened. It just felt like this all happened really fast.
Mm-hmm.
And like, there hasn't been that much time. Like she found Kulat last chapter, right? Like, they haven't been together that long.
It's been
book time.
Fairness. It's been like a couple days, if that.
But in fairness, like, I understand getting kidnapped and being like, whoa, what the fuck? And then getting there and then being like, no, you're our queen. And then being like, oh, so I don't have to walk in the desert with all these people and
I guess,
get eaten by flies?
Yeah, and I guess like earlier in the book, we were setting up Felicin younger being like, what am I? Like, what am I doing here? Like, what's my purpose or whatever? Like when she was just kind of mirroring mirroring Skalara, right? Yeah, she didn't really like have her own thing.
And she is still young, so you know it is. But like, I think it makes sense that she's like comfortable now and just kind of ready to go. I recant my statement.
You recant your statement.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it's like. I agree. It somewhat happens pretty fast, considering where she was like four chapters ago. Not four, like five, six chapters ago.
But
you know?
Also, I mean, where did she start here?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I also think she's a character we don't know a ton about compared to some other characters, you know?
True.
Agreed.
But, well, listen, AJ, unless you have anything else to add.
No.
I think we should thank our sponsors on Patreon.
Yes, let's do that. Before we thank our patrons, I just got a frantic call from my boss. I have to go into work, so I'm going to hop out for the rest of the episode, and maybe I'll give some thoughts in my outro at the end of the episode. Meanwhile, you three have fun. Thank you to all our patrons. TTYL.
Thanks for being here, buddy.
AJ.
We'll miss you.
Bye, everyone.
We will miss you.
And to thank our patrons, we just want to thank Jeff, Kyson, and Sam. Thanks so much for supporting us on Patreon. It means a lot. Makes the show much more sustainable to make. Thank you. On with the show.
Chapter 15. Perrin meets Nodo Boyle, a cutter and former priest to Salil. The cutter has been taking care of Dujek. They speak of the High Fist's health, and he recruits Nodo Boyle to come with him to assault the temple. Tarahaval Adelphat is in Paleo's temple, trapped. She remembers hunting her brother, Quickben. Bridthok sorts coins in the room, and they speak about Paleo and Shaik rising again. Tarahaval recalls a dream Quickben had as a child. Fiddler meets with Quickben and Kalam. Using dolls, they perform a ritual. They see a girl related to Quickben and Shadow Throne. Quickben senses the Eris within Bottle. Nearby, Apshalar was watching from the dark, remembering Tarahaval's name from members' list. She begins to shadow dance. Tellarest and Curdle decide to act. Quickben sets out to meet Shadow Throne, and Fiddler has a bad feeling about it. Perrin and Nota Boyle enter the city. They meet a young girl chosen by Celil. Long ago, she was saved by a Malazan. The girl offers to lead them to safety and away from a broken-faced man. Perrin sends Nota Boyle with her and goes out on his own. Nota Boyle goes with the girl, ruining Perrin and Celil. Perrin encounters the mob. It is led by a man named Brokeface. They threaten each other, and Brokeface agrees to take Perrin to Paleo. Tarahaval waits, reflecting on gods and their followers' cruelty. She is then chosen to be Paleo's new lover, but Perrin arrives. He approaches the goddess. Paleo sits on a throne of twisted bones, and Perrin throws the shard of Ota Teril at her. It lodges in her hand, causing her to start to lose power. Quickben speaks with Shadowthorn about his sister and family ties. Quickben agrees to a debt to the god and then assent to his sister. Shadowthorn snips some nearby threads of magic, confusing Bottle. Now Bottle does not know where Quick is. Captain Sweet Creek and Herlockle are startled by seeing the Hounds of Shadows, and not too far behind them, the Daragoth. Perrin warns Paleo this is a consequence of interfering in the lives of mortals. Brokeface feels alone, thinking back to when he was mutilated and mourning the loss of Paleo's gift. He's furious with Perrin. Quickben arrives in the throne room. He can't use his magic because of the Ota Teril, so he must physically leave the room. He hears the hounds coming. Perrin exits the temple, dodging the Hounds of Shadow. He finds Noto and the girl. Quickben drags his sister out of the temple, avoiding the Hounds of Shadows. Brokeface steps into the path of the Hounds of Shadow, but is merely tossed aside. Seeing Apshalar, he follows her. Apshalar commands him to go to Salil's temple. The Daragoth arrive. Brokeface goes and helps Quick with his sister. Paleo is trapped. She feels the crippled god's power withdrawn. She thinks about mortals and disease. The Hounds of Shadow leave Dejim Abral's last body, and the Daragoth come and kill both Paleo and Dejim. Brokeface convinces Quickben to bring Tarahaval to Solio's temple. At the temple, Perrin summons the goddess. She is annoyed at first, but comes to understand. She starts healing and gives Noto power to take beyond the city. She talks to Perrin of his suffering. Quickben then arrives, and they leave his sister at the temple. Quickben talks with Perrin about whether Tavor can be trusted. He leaves them before his sister awakes. Quickben returns to camp, where Bottle is. He finds them confronting Apshalar, but he stops them. Quickben thinks Apshalar wants to die. Cotillion and Shadowthorn meet aside the Hounds of Shadow. Shadowthorn says he nearly had Quickben, but Cotillion stopped him. Perrin arrives back to camp. He is told he will be the new High Fist. Dujic is dead.
Man, total energy shift. No AJ in the room.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Look at us, the three amigos, three musketeers. Nothing?
You know, I don't know if I'm hungry or if I'm just missing AJ, but I think I'm hungry.
I'm hungry too. I got.
So let's get this show on the road.
Yeah, I'm making some French toast after this. Let's fucking go.
Yo, bro, I'm going to make French toast tomorrow. Literally, I was walking around. It's like, I haven't had French toast in forever. I'm going to fucking eat it tomorrow. So fucking same, bro.
Yeah, excited.
That's all right, so cute. You guys are on the same wavelength.
I bought some French bread last night because I was making dinner for the girlfriend's parents. And
Sorry. Freedom toast. I don't want to give the French any credit.
You're right. But I bought some French bread, make some garlic bread, and I used half the loaf. And I was like, this good ass French toast in the morning. Freedom toast. Sorry.
Freedom toast. God bless.
Only America.
All right, let's kick into it. So, chapter 15. I gotta say, when I think back on reading this book, this is one of the chapters that really stood out to me from my first read of this book, and I remember it absolutely ripping and had a great time this time through. So
didn't disappoint.
Did you guys have fun? I feel like it's like a big, you know, it's a fun actiony chapter.
I loved it.
Chapter. This was 14, 15, and 16. So yeah, so 14 sucked. It made me question everything about this book and what I'm doing here and why I'm doing here.
But 15?
Yeah, 15, I'm still questioning it, but it wasn't as bad.
But 16? All right, so I see the story wasn't going where I thought it was going.
Yeah, you know, honestly, it's just not doing it for me lately. It's just not, but whatever, I digress. Let's get started.
Let's touch on that in a sec. But so Josh, 15 starts, and we meet this Noto Boyle character who's going to be Perrin's kind of companion for this. And then we get thrust full into like, hey, Quickban has a sister. She's really important this chapter. What did you make of this Noto Boyle introduction? We meet the sister, we meet the girl on the street, and then we meet Rotface? No, that's a raid boss. Brokeface.
Yeah, so a lot of characters just get thrown into. I do want to say, Steve does a good job of like, so I know a lot of people have said he doesn't do characterization well, which I think is dumb and wrong. But I think something he does really well is like when you need a quick character, he's like really good at giving just enough to kind of get you to be like, got it, get this dude now. So like Noto Boyle is a cutter who has just ruined his fucking mouth with a fishbone and can't heal anybody, but still tries his best. And I was like, got it. I like this character already. Or I hate him.
I don't know. Noto Boyle.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Weird guy, pretty much, is what I got out of that. But I was like, but I get it. Makes sense now. So I really loved, like, the little interactions where, and then you didn't even write about it in here, but he goes in and, like, sees Dujek, and he's like, he's not going to live the night. And then the one captain, like, knows he's not Captain Kindly, and I was like, ugh. That's probably not good. And as we find out later for Perrin, not good that she knew he wasn't Captain Kindly, I guess.
Yeah, right.
But I liked all that stuff. It was great. Loved Noto's reaction to being told, no, you're coming with me.
Yeah.
Perrin, by the way, is getting bolder and bolder with his plays. Like, I thought Trigall Trade Guild going into unknown warrens to fight scaled bears was dumb. But, like, literally challenging a god with a piece of sword... And the
fucking walks in there, throws the sword, like, and that's why I don't fuck with the mortals, baby. Yeah. It's like, where's this guy been?
Yeah, you know? Perrin is hard as shit now. loved that. Now, a couple questions, Pete, and I'm sure these will never get answered, but I feel like there are breadcrumbs there. The little girl was saved by Fiddler, and Brokeface was bit by Fiddler's horse, right?
Bada bing, he caught it. Boom.
Because I was like, when Brokeface came out and someone mentioned that it was a horse, I was like, there's something there. And then he has his little flashback and he says that Grawl horse. And I was like, oh, that's Fiddler in book two. He's got that Grawl horse and he bites a dude's face. That's fun.
Inge, did you catch that in the girl thing? Because the girl Fiddler saves in Deadhouse Gates.
Yeah. It's like such a small thing that I was like, this will never get revealed. It's definitely just like a, hey, did you read the books recently? How's your memory of unimportant things?
Yeah, that's it's definitely, I 100% I did not really put it together until I kind of read it this time, and then I was making the show notes, and I was like, huh.
It's awesome, I Josh. See. Good job.
But, thank you. But, you I really liked it. And Torahav, I just, look, if you need me to remember something that is super inconsequential to my daily life, I have got that locked the fuck down. But if you're like, Josh, it's vitally important that you do this one thing 3 minutes from now. Guaranteed, I will not do it.
Not happening.
That's how I feel about obscure movie trivia.
Yeah.
I just know some of the dumbest shit. Mm-hmm. And I can't do other stuff.
Like, I can do this, you know? But like a month ago, I almost burnt my house down making simple syrup because I just forgot that I was making simple syrup.
Yeah. So, Inge, what did you make of the introduction of one Toravala Delafat?
Okay. Interesting enough, I was more interested in the fact that... So, first of all, weird. Who saw that coming? Not me.
No,
but secondly...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mostly, she's just kind of talking about Quick Ben and how he's actually like this evil motherfucker ever since he was a child.
Mm.
And that, to me, makes no sense. Because I think Quick Ben's a real cool guy and not evil. Anyway, all that to say, she's interesting. I don't know. We'll see. I don't know. I guess it's interesting. I wasn't like, I was just, it was, it made, it's like everything, you know? Someone comes in and you're like, who the fuck are you? They don't tell you. And then eventually it's like, that's Quick Ben's sister. And you're like, what the fuck? So I guess I'm still kind of sitting with that a little bit, you know?
I do get what you're saying. It is another marble in the what's going on with Quick Ben bit.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like there are two things that I feel like happen all the time in different ways. One is what Josh said earlier. A random character, or was it AJ? A random character comes in. And you have no idea who they are, and then they're suddenly important to the story.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, like, the quirky, weird sidekick that always comes in, which I would say is Noto
Boyle, yeah.
Sure.
So, just, you know, picking up on my little things here. But I don't really have any particular feelings about that. In from this point of the story, I was confused. I didn't understand why she got stuck with Polil and trapped there, and I didn't know who she was. So those are my first thoughts. Finding out she was Quick Ben's sister was weird, but still not, like, it was just like, what? So, yeah. What happened?
I will say, I guess Polil chooses her to be her lover. So I think we can confirm that Polil is a member of the LGBTQ community. So we... hesitantly shout out to Polil.
Do guys have gender in Malazan? Do they have explicit gender, or do they just like,
interesting question?
Do they just show as a particular like manifestation of their energy?
And also, I'm not really into Polil because Polil doesn't discriminate men, women, fair, and children. And that's
Yeah.
Polil's not cool. Polil's not cool.
Honestly, that one snuck by me, and I was mostly just wanting to make that joke, was mostly where my energy was at, and I regret the joke. I'm actually going to withdraw the invitation to the community.
Fair.
Formally declined. I was not into it in the first place, but it's an interesting question, Josh, that you mentioned. I don't really know the answer, and I almost want to talk about it more since I think it's in the next chapter, or maybe it's when Spite's talking to Mappo on the boat. They have a big conversation about, like...
Oh, God, that went over my head in many ways.
Gods, like, what are gods? What are worshiping?
What are gods? Ba-da-ba-da-ba. It's like that song, you know?
It's really good. It's like, our gods... I don't know, man. I think gods are great to think about in this world, you know? Anywho's, let's stay in this chapter. So they're in the city, and Quick Ben shows up, and Quick Ben goes to Shadow Throne, and he's like, bro, send me in. I gotta get in there. And then he ends up with his debt to Shadow Throne.
That was a choice.
So Josh, what do you think of that choice? And what do you think of Quick Ben's like arrival in the chapter?
Oh man. You know? So the string thing was cool. We've actually seen that, I think, in Memories of Ice, and I remember then being
Yeah,
like,
I think it was
really
that.
Sick.
I kind of forget when.
I forgot that Bottle had the Eris. I know it was like something about that had been seen in an earlier chapter of this book or the fourth book. I forget. But I'd completely...
There's been some groundwork.
Completely had forgotten that. But, and that's cool enough. But then in the throne room, I had to tell you, I was so on edge the whole time because like he comes in and he's like, something's wrong. There's something quite right with Shadow Throne. And I was like, if Quick Ben feels that, probably accurate, but then Cotillion comes in quickly soon after and like doesn't seem to think anything's wrong. I don't know. I'm realizing more and more in this book that Cotillion is our kind of like is our POV, and Shadowthrone isn't. And that I'm realizing more and more that, like, Shadowthrone's a real big question mark for me. I do not know if he is someone that I would call, like, on the side of good. There are big air quotations there, folks. Because, like, I guess the good side is the people not with the crippled god. But that's really painting some broad strokes, because I think there's many factions within that group of people. So sure. I'm struggling to know if I want to, like, how I feel about Shadowthrone. This chapter definitely makes it feel like he can't be trusted in any way. So I just found it really interesting, though, because I had kind of written the two of them off as a pair, like, perfectly in sync. And then in this part of the book, I was like, maybe they aren't, like, you know, like, they're definitely boys, you know, like, and they are partners, but they maybe aren't working towards exactly the same goal, or at least they're not working to it in the same way, which I found interesting.
Yeah. And then later on, of course, Absalar's there doing her own thing mm-hmm. for Cotillion in a way. And then we have that final conversation at the end of the chapter where Shadowthrone and Cotillion are, like, I don't know, jamming, and they're talking next to the totally fucked up dogs.
Yeah.
Inge, what do you make of those two? You know, they both make an appearance in this chapter.
I agree with Josh. I also thought the same thing. I thought they were working toward the same exact goal. But to hear, like, I think it was Shadowthorn who was like, fucked me up, Cotillion, or the other mm-hmm. way around. But sure. What did he mean? Like, what is he trying to do to Quick Ben? Does he want to, like, what is the, or do we just not know? Do I just not know?
It feels like he wants to kill Quick Ben.
Right.
But we know that, you know, the bridge burners were very important to the Emperor, right? Like, we know, and we know that when the Emperor died, like, the bridge burners were, like, on top, like, to the point that Whiskey Jack was, like, people thought he would be the Emperor, and then he kind of just, like, vanished to avoid that or something weird. So we know all that. But what we don't really know is that time period in between the first book and the Emperor becoming Shadowthrone, because somehow in that time, Quick Ben did a lot of stuff with Shadowthrone, but also maybe double crossed him a bunch or tricked him a bunch. That's like that weird time we don't know about. And it really confuses me how he did that much in such a short amount of time. Because how long has Lysine even been Empress?
I don't know. I mean, Lysine ascends in Gardens of the Moon or around the start of it? I kind of forget that.
Oh, you know what? It's at the... No, I can't remember. Because at the beginning...
It's 118 years.
So parents in a child in the beginning...
Parents a child in the prologue. Yeah. She has just ascended. And then there's a time skip to chapter one where he's like an older man, like a young man.
Yeah, he's like... I mean, so it's been like 15 years. So in those 15 years, Quick Ben has gone from like good, reliable sorcerer of the Emperor to... you know, Shadowthrone wanting him dead. So it doesn't, I don't really get it, but I'm sure someone does.
Mayhaps. I thought the broke face thing, I mean, I kind of enjoy that these characters make a reprise, but I don't know if the broke face part of it hit me super hard, you know?
Yeah.
But I think it's kind of interesting him to play show up and play heel for just this chapter, mm-hmm. you know? All right, so then we also have this Polyle. We have a short scene from her point of view. She feels the crippled god leaving her. And then, of course, Perrin's already been here. We mention it, throws the Ode to Tarl shard into her. She's totally trapped. And then the Hounds of Shadow lead the Daragoth there. Daragoth totally fuck her up, kill Dejim Nabral. It's a 1-2 punch. And then Perrin skips on out of there, and he starts heading towards Solil's temple. And I found a lot of this action really fun. And I love when the big dogs get to be big dogs, mm-hmm. you know, they don't always do. And sometimes they're just hanging out. But here, just the big dogs are all hanging out, being just doggos, you know, big and dogs. You love to see it. And I love just imagining the big doggos. It's a fun time for me. OK,
I've never heard you say the word dog and doggo that many times in one go.
Doggos,
especially seeing as you used to hate dogs. So it's really refreshing.
It's been a big turnaround for me. So then, at the end of the chapter, Perrin summons Solil, Polyl's sister, the goddess of healing, and they kind of convene. Solil gives Nota Boyle some power, and then Perrin and Quick Ben have this whole conversation about whether Tavor can be trusted. India, what did you make of Perrin talking about his sister and this conversation with the goddess Solil?
I feel like Perrin is very consistent in how he feels about his sister, and... almost respectful of it too. Like, he's never like, no, she's such a bitch. Like, Felicin is like, fuck my sister back in the day. But Perrin is very, like, understanding of her, I feel like, of her mindset on the whole thing. Like, he's never, like, he's very, like, well, she's very in the interest of herself and her soldiers as one. There is no difference. Like, she will just do what's best for, you know, whatever. I don't really know. But he's always very, like, I feel like, passive about it. Like, he doesn't really have any real, he's coming at it from, like, a wise perspective, I feel. I don't know. I think it's interesting. Mm-hmm. When he talks about Tavor and how he talks about her.
Yeah, I agree. It feels like he speaks about with her about with respect, I feel.
Yeah. Like, and also I feel like it's not very, but like, it's also like very, like, not personal. Like
it's, I agree with that. It's not like, oh, my sister, the light of my life, you know?
Right. Like, it's just very, like, from, like, a distance of somebody that's looking at it from, like, a very non-personal perspective. So I think that's interesting, but also strange. But it makes sense. And that's how I don't know. That was my thoughts on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Quick Ben, after talking with Perrin, returns to the camp, kind of stops them. They were, like, kind of beefing with Absalar. Why do you laugh?
Because they're just, like, everybody's just so quick to, like, it's, like, give Absalar a freaking break. Like, she was, like, not herself when she was just recklessly killing everyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I like to think that if I was possessed by a god, my friends would be a little bit more forgiving of me afterwards, you know?
Right!
So. I do get, though, how if you were, like, yeah, so, just by the way, the last month or so is possessed by a god. You can't hold me accountable for that stuff. That
you
wasn't
literally
me.
You can't. It's not like when I was drunk, I did this. Like, no, it was
exactly,
I literally.
Yeah. You're making the choice to get white girl wasted. I'm not making the choice to have, you know, a god come into my body.
I'm just saying, I get how if you told me that, like, if you spent a month being a dick to me and then you're like, I'm sorry, a god was in me. Like, I could get how it still just would take a second for, you know, I get it, you know?
Yeah, but, like, it's not like they don't know.
And, well, I'll just say, Absalar's still at least a little sketchy. She's not a person without a little bit of sketch on her, you know?
Well, I mean, would you be sketchy?
I'm just saying.
No, she is sketchy. That is fair.
I mean, they're all sketchy. Quick Ben's fucking sketchy.
Well, that's true. Quick Ben's definitely got sketchy energy.
And they have like, blind loyalty. Quick Ben's gone. No idea where he is. Can't track him. And they're like, nah, he's fine. Come... You killed Quick Ben, Absalar. Like, no. In fact, I was saving his sister. You're welcome.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she, like, maybe would have killed Quick Ben, though. So, like...
No, she wasn't going to.
So then Josh Perrin returns to camp. Dujek has died. I gotta say, I was super bummed. I feel like when I read the series for the first time, Dujek was this huge character in my head, loomed really big in my mind. And the fact that he dies in such a soft and just like quiet, unceremonious way.
Yeah, it was a huge fucking bummer. There is no two ways around it.
Go ahead, Josh.
No, go ahead, India.
I am just gonna say... Dujek technically did get his ceremonious death.
That is true.
Yeah.
That is true.
Yeah.
Honestly, if I were actually, no, it's not like it wasn't a painful death. It was still pretty fucked up. But, you know, it's better than being crucified. So.
That's true. I mean,
I guess.
Getting
if I
your
had
eyeballs
to pick.
Eaten out by the birds.
She's got you there.
Anyway,
Pete.
Also, quickly. We don't even know. I'm not even going to let this... I'm not even going to go into Dujek is, like, dead until I know for a fact that in the next book, his ghost isn't going to be like, what's up?
That is true. So, his ghost is going to appear with the bridge burners, and now he'll be leading that giant dead army or some bullshit.
Exactly.
And he'll have two arms. Dujek, two arms in the house.
Yeah. He actually comes back. He has a robot arm now. That's his thing.
Yeah. He got really into mecha anime.
Yeah.
I felt really bad, but also, honestly, in some ways, relieved. Because whenever the gods say some like weird cryptic shit, I'm always like really worried. So she was like, "You'll be the one suffering," or some bullshit. That's what Celil said to Perrin. And I was like, "Are you gonna? Is he gonna feel a lot of pain or something weird?" And then no, he's just the High Fist. Which I don't think is as bad as he's making it out to be. And we now have the potential for two Empire armies led by the Perrins and the world's most awkward family reunion, which I have to hope happens someday in this
they
series.
They do. I forget if they say it in this chapter or the next chapter. They're like, "Oh, it's funny that it's a brother and sister.
I know. I was like, "Oh, that's." I want them to meet really badly.
I wonder what AJ thinks about all this.
Cue up AJ's later recorded segment. Here, let's give some quick responses to make it easier when he does.
Thanks, Josh. So I did have a little quote from Palil here that I wanted to read that I thought was very good. We briefly get Palil's POV before she's killed, and she's talking about how the plague was meant to heal Burn, and her final thought is, "Only humans center salvation solely upon themselves." I just thought that was a great line.
Interesting.
About how humanity has a hard time seeing past itself sometimes, stuff like that.
I didn't think of it that way.
But it kind of gets me thinking in general, you know, about the human condition as a whole.
Really?
Like, what does it mean to consider what's like best?
That's stupid.
All right. Fine. Quickben owes Shadowthrone a debt now, which like...
Get the fuck out of here, man.
Yeah, exactly. But I guess the alternative would be Quick not saving his sister and telling Shadowthrone, like, "Nah, fuck her, it's cool.
You're a piece of shit and I hate you."
Right. And then I guess I'm just sad about Dujek, obviously, really wild, like Josh said, that it's just like, "I am dead now." I wish we could have gotten Perrin in there to, like, say goodbye.
I want to kiss you on your lips.
Yeah, or that. That's pretty much it. I guess I'll just mix that in post.
All right, AJ, so you can mix that all in post.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Let's get on over to chapter 16. Chapter 16. The 14th is boarding ships. They are to leave Seven Cities and return to Unta. Captain Keneb is unsure why. Lassine says they will eventually be sent to Coral, but he does not believe her. Keneb speaks with the other Fists and the Adjunct, but he is worried about the soldiers. They've lost contact with Dujek, and Pearl is missing. The army's morale is holding on by a thread. Baerithal, Shower, Cutter, and Skellara leave town. Cutter wants to take Haborik to the jade statue. The corpse's hands have turned into solid jade. Afterwards, Cutter starts to reminisce about his life in Darujistan, and Skellara says she would like to go with him. Maybe she could make a life there. Skellara thinks Cutter is lonely, and she thinks about her baby. Then she speaks briefly with Baerithal. Ganath watches the sky where the K'chain Shamal Skykeep once was. She thinks about the dragon blood that had been spilled there. She thinks about Perrin, but is suddenly attacked and killed by short-tailed K'chain Naruk. At sea, Spite speaks with Mappo about gods, inequality, and the war between the gods. They are going to the Otateral Sea. The Imperial painter Ormal Gon paints. His toad criticizes him. Perrin considers what's to do with the army. Herlock says the soldiers will serve him regardless of what Lassine says. Perrin then sets out to find the painter Ormal Gon. He wants a new deck of dragons made. Karsa, Samar, and Boatfinder find corpses. Karsa then sets out. Samar finds Karsa fighting 50 or so Eater, bodies scattered all around. Eater sorcery is tried on Karsa, but has no effect. Soon, however, the Eater use an interpreter to speak with them. The interpreter makes various offerings to Karsa, asking when his vengeance will be satisfied. However, Karsa continues to refuse.
Finally, the leader of these eater offers that Karsa could duel the Tist Eater Emperor. An emperor has killed thousands. Karsa agrees. Kenneb speaks to Tamul about the Wiccans' return to Unta. Tamul says he feels shame, that he wanted to die against the enemies of Coltane. A shame of defeat, and he thinks returning home will break them. Dogs bark and troops draw near the ships. Tavor speaks about their delayed departure, and then finds the survivors from Yucatan. Faradan Sort surrenders herself and asks mercy for Sin. Fiddler says if she hangs Sort for desertion, they'll have to hang everyone. Tavor welcomes them as bone hunters in truth. So Josh, the 14th is getting ready to leave. They're boarding ships. They're headed home, and then they're going to go to Coral. What do you think? Their morale's low.
It should be. They fucked up terribly. But anytime people get on boats in books, I always get a little worried because, like, the sea is fickle. But I don't know. It just was a section. It wasn't anything too crazy for me. Although, thank God someone listened to Grub finally. Because too often we're like, oh, he's just a child. And it's like, children don't say that shit. Okay? Possessed people say that shit. Listen to this fucking person when they say wild stuff.
Sure.
So, and Kenneb doing it without even like, ooh, hemming and hawing about it. Just like, yeah, I'll just fucking delay. Like, easy. I loved that. I was like, thank goodness we finally have a sensible person.
What did you make of that Kenneb is like sketched about Tavor in a way?
Why wouldn't you be sketched about Tavor in a way? She's always in her tent with T'Amber, which, by the way, who the fuck is that still?
No. Correct.
Right? Like, that's got to be so. It's got. T'Amber has to be someone else that we know is important and is just here as the concubine or whatever word she wants to use. Consort, I think.
Concubine.
Yeah, concubine's not the great word. I think it's consort. But anyway, like, Tavor's just not in there nonstop fucking. Like, there's got to be some weird reason that T'Amber's always in there. So why wouldn't you be sketched out? Like, it makes total sense to me. And she's also...
Talk about welcome members of the community. Shout out, you know.
Shout out.
Shout out.
Shout out.
Shout out.
Shout out.
Shout out.
I'm done. I'm done. Nope. I don't know. I get why everyone's sketched. I loved... I want to go back to it, because India mentioned it. The parents... Ganois's answer about his sister is just so spot on. Like, I don't think she is human in the way that a lot of people are human. I don't know. She seems very, like, clinical. So I get why that would be disconcerting if that was your leader.
And also, where the hell is Pearl? Does anybody know? Did I miss it?
No.
He's gone.
We don't know because we thought Pearl saved Lestari Yil, but that was actually Cotillion who saved her. But we had all been like, it was probably Pearl yanking her into a worm, but it wasn't. And Pearl's just been gone since. He left after the battle because Lestara was gone. That's right. We did kind of hear that, but I don't think we saw from his POV.
Got it.
So we cut to the crew. They're rolling through the desert. They're going to bring Haborg's hands or actual jade down. They're going to bring him to the statue. Mm-hmm. And they start talking about Darujistan. What did you make of these folks? Skalara is thinking, is like, ah,
time
Cutter's
to go
just
home.
Lonely.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll go to Darujistan. What do you think, Inge?
I think that Skalara also kind of has no purpose without her crew. Like, where does she go? Where does Skalara go? So I think that now, only having... And Cutter, I think, aka Crocus, is kind of in the same boat. Like, they were all just a group of misfits that came together, worked out, and now their group kind of, you know, fell apart, and it's... They're not really sure what's next. Crocus put everything into taking care of his group. Failed. He didn't stand a chance, though, let's be real.
Failed spectacularly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Say.
Absolutely. It was an epic failure. And then didn't even die. Then only to survive this now.
He couldn't even fuck up correctly.
Right. Then, and not to mention, first he lost Absalar. So I think that they're both just in like this really weird little boat of like, what's next? So for Skalara, it makes sense to, well, let's just go back now and live, start over together. Because that's all, I think that's all that they both really have right now.
I love this line. I agree with a ton of what you said, Inge. I thought it was great. I just wanted to read this line that really struck me. It's Skalar is thinking about him. She thinks, Cutter was reaching out to the comfort of old memories, suggesting to her that he was suffering from loneliness. You know?
That's sad.
And it's like, it is sad. And I've certainly taken solace in old memories. You know, I feel like it's a pretty human thing. And I think it's, you can hear, I can hear the forlornness in his voice when he's talking about Darujistan, you know?
Mm-hmm. The last time especially things were really stable, you know?
Yeah. And like, it's funny for him to think about that time, which we were reading him in that time. And it's not like he was like chilling out party zone, you know?
That's when he loved that woman.
Chalice.
Yeah, Chalice.
Yeah, Chalice to Arl.
Throwback.
When he snuck into her bedroom casually.
Yeah.
Classic.
Creep.
You know, as you
classic
do.
Classic Crocus.
The stakes were so low back then. There was just a jagged tyrant.
Yeah. He was just a petty thief.
Who was of indeterminate size. Maybe he was 80 feet tall. Maybe he was 8 feet tall, like every other jagged we've met.
Yeah. No, I think that's what's funny. I mean, you think you look back on that first book, the stakes are really, really low, you know?
Yeah.
It's like the Empire wants to control Darujistan, you know? Oh, there's this scene where Gennath gets fucking Sia murdered.
Yeah.
Watch out. The tails are short.
That was unexpected. And but that's it.
Ba-da-boom.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the person that was with Perrin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Josh, you mentioned it was going over your head earlier. I thought this conversation between Mappo and Spite absolutely rips shredding electric guitar solo. Loved it all.
Oh, yeah.
Inge, what did you think of it?
No, I want to know what why. Please elaborate on why you feel so strongly, PB.
I just think it was a great conversation. I mean, I know it's kind of just like maybe a bit navel-gazy about gods and stuff, you know? But I also think it's a conversation about how we construct power and how, I don't know, it's just really good. Also, there's a lot of talk about War of the Gods, you know?
Any god talk is so far over my head. It's not even.
Let me read a long quote that I liked. More often than not, of course, such inequity does exist, and it is the poison that breeds the darkest fruit. Mundane wealth is usually built upon bones, piled high and packed deep. Alas, the holders of that wealth misapprehend the nature of their reward, and are so often blithely indifferent in their ostentatious display of their wealth. The misapprehension is this: that those who do not possess wealth all yearn to it, and so seek likeness, and this yearning eclides all feelings of resentment, exploitation, and most relevantly, injustice. To some extent they are right, but mostly they are woefully wrong. When wealth ascends to a point where the majority of the poor finally comprehend that it is, for them, unattainable, then all civility collapses and anarchy prevails. Now I was speaking of war among the gods. You know, and I think that's very, really strikes a bone in my body, you know, and I think, wealth disparity is a huge issue in our time. And I just think, when you talk about inequality and what that leads to, and you talk about war between the gods in that way, not in some sort of supernatural fantastical sense, but as these conflicts between these larger ideals, that, I don't know, just really rings in my gut. So really liked that scene.
Mm-hmm.
Josh, any feeling about this conversation on the boat?
Nothing to add, just that it was good.
Yeah, I mean, I think thinking about, like, the war with the gods versus, like, normal people is just a little bit more, it's just definitely more like complex because God knows what they're even freaking doing. Like, they fight in such a different way. We don't even know what's going on. We don't even know until after it happens that it was like a plan to begin with. So I don't know. I think it's definitely an interesting conversation when you think of it in that way, because what about, like, what is, I don't even know what the war with the gods is about, but yeah, but when you look at it in that perspective, Peter, about like wealth disparity and I don't know, I just wonder, like, what is the disparity then between the gods that is causing this war? And will we find out?
Ange, I think to build on what you said, Mappo has this quote. He says, "We are, as the soil and the sea, driven by unseen forces, forever in motion, even when we stand still."
Right. Mm-hmm.
Which I think really hits me as it's like, man, our lives are totally fucked, totally shaped by these massive things that are just totally out of our control. And the idea that we are masters of our own fate, I think, is like such an ill-conceived, egotistical notion. You know, I mean, fucking look at this pandemic that just, you know, talk about the thing that's out of our fucking control. You know,
We are all just these tiny little specks on a large on a tiny little rock. Floating through space.
All right, let's bring it back down to Earth. So that's right, baby Josh. The painter's back. Croak, croak. There's a frog in the background. Painter comes back and he's going to make a new deck of dragons. Did you think he was going to make a return?
I did not, but I should have known. I think they even mentioned him at one point. I forget, but I think someone in this book had mentioned him, unless I'm thinking something else. But I hate him. Hate him so much, and I hate his frog. And in the third book, they were a nice relief in, you know, between an army of people eating other people, and you know, Tok being tortured. It was fun to just have like a nice little painter guy. But here, read the room. All right, Dujek's dead. This is not the time. Although the toad exactly calling out the three scenes was very funny. I did find that very good.
I do think it's funny when he's like, he brings a critic with him everywhere.
Yeah, that
he
was
goes.
Funny.
God, yeah, it was a funny joke.
Yeah, but I don't know. He just kind of was there. I mean, convenient that he's there so that Perrin. Why did Perrin need a new deck of dragons? Is it because he's been throwing cards down? Like, he threw a card down to get Salil there, maybe?
Hasn't really been talked about. But do you also hear that the army is like super into Perrin and they're going to go with him? What'd you make of that?
I'm curious what I love that we don't get to see it, but I'm so curious as a reader what the logs said about Perrin.
Yes.
Right? Like, they're right there in front of him and he's like, "I can't do it." And I'm like, "Fuck you. I want to know." Like, it's not about you right now, Perrin.
It's about me, the reader.
Yeah, but I did like it though. I thought it was good. All that.
I thought that Lucene was dead.
No.
The Empress is alive. She had a...
Kalam was trying to kill her in the second one, and she talked through that old lady.
That
yeah,
was
we
dead.
Haven't. Yeah we haven't her. Seen her since Perrin talked with her in the throne room in chapter like one of the first book.
I think that's true. Yes, I believe that's true. Mm-hmm. I'm mixing up some other things, but yeah. So, Inch, we cut to Karsa, and there's this whole scene. We meet this interpreter, the Taxilian. There's all the eater. They fight, and then it ends. He's like, "Fuck it, I'm gonna go duel the Emperor."
And is the Emperor who I think it is?
It is who you think it is.
Well, then I'm fascinated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I gotta see what's gonna. I mean, what? What? Who would have thought? Who
and we met
it?
Someone from the last book, Hunrabi. We know Hunrabi. He's the leader of that northern tribe, maybe, that liked Troll and then didn't like Troll.
Yeah, it was a tribe they mentioned. I forget it because my brain's paper, but it's like it starts with an M, maybe.
Yeah, but they said the leader of it was, like, they were talking to Hunrabi, and I was like, "Oh, we met him. He's a bit of a fuck." Who's that blonde girl? Should we know that? Do you know that,
the
India?
Taxilian.
Why?
Do we know who that is, Peter? Is that a name I should remember from the last book?
I don't think you should know that.
Okay,
is my feeling.
Oh.
Go
ahead.
I hope I didn't spoil that it is who it is.
No,
but
the name
that
was there, I think. I think we heard.
No, I meant that the Emperor is the person you're thinking
it's
of.
It's Rulad. It has to be Rulad.
Yeah, it is.
It has
I just,
to be Rulad.
Who else
like,
would it be?
Okay, good.
I don't know. This is why I remember this part of the book so well, because I think the last chapter ripped so hard, and then I remembered reading this scene, and it broke my brain.
Yeah. Well, because, like, We knew that the worlds were near each other because of Troll, you know, existing on this in the fourth book, you know, and meeting some people. But
sure, sure.
I didn't think they would meet this fast. I have so many thoughts about all of that. Number one, loved Samar Dev's commentary on all of the language they were using. Like when sure. they said Preda, and she was like, oh, that's some First Empire language. I've never heard it spoken before, but it's like a bastardization of it. Because we like sort of knew that there were First Empire ties from last book.
There was light talk of that.
And also, I don't know if you caught this, India, but this, the Tisti Eater have taken on the Lether army structure. They took on all the terminology that that the Lether would have used, which is funny because like the Lether literally said, I can't remember who said it, but they were like, well, if they conquer us, the problem is they are going to like our civilization is going to infiltrate theirs, and they're going to kind of like become more like us than they want to be, and like already we're seeing that apparently they're organizing their armies as the Lether would, which is crazy.
That is interesting.
It's a great catch. It's a great catch from you, Josh. Inge, what did you make of this? What do you think of this idea? What did you think of Maker Karsa in this scene?
Karsa is fearless, and he has no idea. I have no idea. Yeah. I thought it was really interesting, though. I mean, it's kind of like what you expected, but not what you expected. Karsa, like Samar finding Karsa, just slaughtering a bunch of people single-handedly, and then... I don't know. It was interesting. It was good. I liked it.
Ditto, Josh. I think, and I liked it too, obviously. But ditto to something you said I wanted to touch on. I just want to check with Inge. But I remember when I read it that I knew, I guess, that the Tisti Eater stuff would be relevant.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, I guess my brain's so short memory or whatever that just like, I was like, well, I'm sure this stuff won't come up again. I read book 5, that was a self-contained thing. and then they showed up in this book, and I remember being like, oh my god, the Tist Eater, I know who they are now. Uh-huh. And they're mentioning this emperor, and holy shit, that's Rulad, and, you know, damn.
Yeah, I'm so excited to see how that goes. I wonder if either of like, the 14th armies will end up having to fight them, like if they're going to meet somewhere. The 14th or whatever Dujex is, the 9th.
Honestly, I forget right now. I don't know.
Me either.
So Inge, Tumul is here and he's speaking about the Wiccans and he's like pretty bummed out and he's like, damn, we're like totally defeated. He feels shameful. And he's not, he thinks the return to Unta is going to be hard for the Wiccans. What do you think?
What is Unta? When were they in Unta? That name sounds familiar. Is that relevant? Like,
Unta's relevant.
Yeah, isn't it, like, something to do with, like, the heart of the Empire? Like, isn't it, like, one of the big Empire places?
Yeah.
I can't remember for sure, though. Because Quantali is the continent.
Quantali is the continent. Unta's the capital of the Empire.
Not Malaz City.
No, I could be getting it fucked around. I actually think... It was one of them was once the capital, and then
I think Malaz City was the capital, and now Unta is. I think.
Yeah. Yes. Maybe I could be wrong. I think I am wrong. So, I have to be honest. I've always mixed them up myself, and I. It just trips me up. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I have a question.
Sure.
I don't want you guys to make fun of me if I'm wrong.
I would never make fun of you. I am correct. Unta is the Imperial capital.
All right. So I have a take that I want to talk about the Eaters.
Sure.
And if I'm wrong, we'll just move past it.
Okay.
I wasn't going to bring it up, but here I go.
Okay.
Okay. The Taxilian person had a finger.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Featherwitch?
I forgot about whose finger got cut off? The brother. Breeze's finger got cut off. Wow. I thought they had said there was a body they found that was missing a finger, but maybe I was wrong. It would make a lot more sense if it was Breeze's finger. No, I think you're right, Andy.
Well, the only reason I say that is because you guys are like, I thought it yesterday. I read it yesterday. And then Peter kind of made it seem like we might, like, he didn't make it seem like that, but, like, I have a feeling that we know who the Taxilian person is. Not that it's relevant, but I think it would just be interesting if it was. Mm-hmm. And you're covering your face now. Am I wrong? He is covering his face now.
I just don't want to. I don't want to underplay the importance of Malaz City, another important place.
Well, we were in Malaz City. That's where that. That's where the dead house is. That's where that place. It's where Mox Hold is.
Yeah. But Unta is technically the capital, but Malaz City also important. So this is just to put a button on that.
Got it.
And I have no comment about your other thing. So
okay. Someone cut off one of his fingers. So there was a body that was found with a finger cut off. So it could be that, or it could
maybe
be...
Maybe I don't know.
Yeah, I don't remember Featherwitch being able to cast spells. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes, she could. I thought that she did all that shit.
She read the holds. She was able to read all of the holds and do that weird kind of like reading the Deck of Dragons, but the older version. But I don't think she could actually like access a warrant.
Maybe it's not.
I don't know. That would be fucking cool though.
So the last part of this chapter, we threw out to the Wiccans, who are in a bad place. You hate to see it. And then
they're always in a bad place. They've been in a bad place since we've met them.
That's true. Yeah. They've basically never been vibing.
Yeah.
And then last, the survivors from Yucatan show up, and Tavor like isn't a dick about it. You know.
I was shocked.
You thought she was going to be a dick about it.
I was worried that she would be.
Bone Hunters in Truth. Flip the page, book four, The Bone Hunters. Ba-ba-boom. Feels like it really hit me, you know?
Yeah, it's good.
You know, we're doing it, you know? So I think that's going to wrap it up for us here today, unless you guys have anything else to add on these three chapters.
No, I solid time. As always, I'm left at the end of this book going, well, what the fuck are we doing? Oh my god, my whole ass book just fell. No idea where we could be going from here because there's too many plot threads and I don't know how Steve's going to do it.
You don't know how Steve's going to do it. Is he going to get it done, India? What do you think? Are all the plot threads going to end?
They always do.
Yeah.
The only one that's not going to end is anything that has to do with the crippled god.
Accurate.
Man.
And you know what else is not gonna end? Anything with Mappo and Akarium. I see them making it to the very end because Akarium is going to destroy the world at the end of this series. I've decided, by the way.
I wonder, it's gonna have to come to an end at some point. Like right now it feels like it's all on Seven Cities and it's going to end this book, but like I'm like India. I can't imagine this thread ending here. It would make no sense.
I will just say this. We're actually not done introducing plot lines to the story yet. So.
Good.
Well, awesome. we're aware.
Obviously.
Yeah.
It's not the last chapter.
All the time, whenever I like occasionally glance at the Malazan subreddit, there's always hundreds of names and places that I'm like, well, got a lot more people to meet, I guess, and things to do.
Just always, you know, Steve. Steve's on his grind, you know, introducing new people.
Oh, yeah.
But listen, that's going to do us for your day. Maybe AJ has edited in their comments. Let us know what you think of the show at 10verybigbooks@gmail.com. We're on Twitter. Tell a friend about the show. Thank you so much for listening. And next week on the show, we're reading chapters 17, 18, 19, and 20. And that's going to lead us into ending out the Bone Hunters. Looking forward to it. That'll do us all for today. See you.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Hello, everybody. Producer AJ here in a tank top. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the podcast. I was really bummed that I had to duck out early, but I think it was nice to have the original trio back in full force for one more episode. If you'd like to give us your thoughts or feelings about this or any of our episodes, you can always email us at 10verybigbooks@gmail.com, tweet us at 10verybigbooks, or you can head on over to our Discord, bit.ly/VBBDiscord. That's capital V, capital B, capital B, capital D, Discord. That link will also be in the show notes. Thank you to all of our wonderful patrons over on patreon.com. If you would like to pledge to our Patreon, you can head on over to our Patreon at patreon.com/10verybigbooks. That link will also be in the show notes. And as always, thank you so very much to Dan Gezerick for making our spectacular cover art. You can follow him on Twitter at @A_W_DanG for the hottest baseball tweets. And of course, the wonderful music in today's episode is by the one and only Amaranthan from their album Simulant Rain, which you can find along with their other music on bandcamp.com. Links to their pages will be in the show notes. And 10 Very Big Books will be back in 2 weeks on July 16th, where we'll be discussing The Bone Hunters, chapters 17, 18, 19, and 20. I'll talk to you then, and thank you so much for listening.